This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Hi, I'm Chad Stout, and I'm a registered professional forester in California. Growing up, I was always in the woods, and I've just always had a passion for that. Now, I'm passionate about growing a sustainable working forest. What makes a working forest sustainable is growing more than what we harvest. And managing those forests to promote health, we're looking 80 to 100 years down the road. The forest that I'm working on is for my kids' kids.
Learn more at workingforestinitiative.com.
This is Larry Flynn, owner of The Floor Store. The end of the year means our New Year's clearance sale. That means up to 50% off store wide from now till January 6th on carpet, hardwood, waterproof flooring, and more. It also means interest-free financing for a full 18 months and no sales tax on anything. It all adds up to a happy New Year, except for one little thing. It ends Monday. Go to floorstores.com to find the nearest of our 9 Bay Area showrooms, from Santa Rosa to San Jose. The Floor Store, your Bay Area flooring authority.
This is The Climate Question from the BBC World Service. I'm Sophie Eastall, and I'm speaking to someone with a very enviable job, a safari guide in Tanzania, Nima Amos.
I'm in the vehicle right now. What I'm seeing in front of me is the woodlands area. A lot of birds, the greenery of the woodland area, it's beautiful. I don't see any animal for the moment. I know at night they're going to be a lot of them, because when everybody is sleeping, that's the time that these animals are going to roam around like, okay, this is our land, especially hyenas.
It's a pretty incredible place to call your office.
Yes, for sure.
And what animals are you following at the moment?
At the moment, great migration. Great migration is among the biggest things that our guests love to see, because it's very amazing to see the number of the wildebeest that we have, the number of the zebras.
This week, we're tracking some of the largest animal migrations on Earth. The hundreds of thousands of wildebeest, zebras and gazelles that stomp through East Africa, and the great white sharks that hunt the oceans. But the world is warming, so I want to know, how is climate change impacting these epic animal journeys?
Migration is the biggest migration that we have here in Tanzania. We have these millions of wildebeest mixed with zebras that we have here in Serengeti, moving from the one place to another for availability of food and water.
And what does it look like? I mean, I've only seen it in videos, but it must be a pretty awesome sight with so many animals.
Yes, it's plenty of animals, a lot of wildebeest. When you see thousands of them running together, I mean, it's something that you can't even be able to explain it well if you see it. It's a magical thing.
Yeah. And do you get the other animals running after them? I mean, the predators, the lions and the cheetahs.
For sure, yes. Wildebeest, they're the main source of the Serengeti ecosystem. They help to increase the number of the predators. So whenever the migration pass, the lions, the leopards, cheetahs, small cats, vultures, hyenas, everybody's happy because food is everywhere.
And what kind of noise does this great migration make? Is it pretty noisy?
Wow, it's a funny noise for sure. I get this from a lot of my guests when the migration, they're around here. They're like, okay, you know what? We couldn't sleep at night. Somebody was waking up all the time. They're making the noise like, all the time. Imagine for thousands and thousands of wildebeest around.
It must be quite hard to sleep.
For sure, it's very hard.
As the seasons change, the wildebeest move from the Serengeti in Tanzania to the Masai Mara in Kenya, following the rains and the resulting luscious grass. For the last few months, the hungry herbivores have been busy giving birth to their calves.
I'm telling you, it's a wonderful moment seeing how they're giving birth, and straight ahead after 1 minute, 2 minutes, the calf can be able to walk. the mother can be able to lactate the cub. It's a moment that whenever you see it, you're like, okay, these are incredible animals.
But recently, Nima's seen the patterns of this birthing change.
Because of the climate changes last year, we had unexpected rain, a lot of rain, which made even the wildebeest being a little bit confused. Like, I was at the eastern part of Serengeti this January, and there were plenty of the wildebeest giving birth around that area where they were supposed to not be at this time. But because it's raining everywhere, so they are like scattered, going up and down, going east to west. So it has been a little bit confusing.
Climate change is making rainfall in the Serengeti and the Masai Mara more unpredictable. Last year, vast quantities of rain on the Tanzanian side meant the grass grew everywhere, so the wildebeest were giving birth in different areas than usual. And it's not just Nima who's concerned about this.
I first got involved in this when I was an undergraduate student in Kenya in the early years. During that time, we went to visit Masai Mara, and I got really interested in the place ever since.
Joseph Ogutu moved to Germany, where he's a senior statistician at the University of Hohenheim, and he focuses on wildlife in this very ecosystem. He's been analysing data captured by the Kenyan government, which sends people in low-flying planes over this vast savannah to painstakingly count, by the human eye and with photographs, the number and timings of wildebeest. And climate change is causing the Great Migration to change.
We are seeing that the migration used to visit Masai Mara in much larger numbers in the 70s and the 80s. There used to be at least over 1 million wildebeest alone coming to Masai Mara from the Serengeti. But over the years, that number has gone down. And nowadays, it is hard to find more than just about 250,000 visiting the Mara.
That's a big change, from over a million to 250,000.
It's a massive change indeed. The other change is that these few that do make it to the Mara each dry season spend less time in the Mara than they used to do in the early years. And they're spending about 1.5 months less, based on our estimates, than they used to do in the early years when they were coming in larger numbers.
Those are huge shifts over the decades. The wildebeest are spending less time in Kenya. They prefer it on the Tanzanian side, where Nima says there's been more rain and therefore more grass. Climate change is affecting the animals in lots of different ways.
The first is through the Mara River. So in recent years, the Mara River nearly completely dried out, which represented a serious challenge. Secondly, when the rainfall reduces, then the amount of grass produced also reduces, forcing the migration to move over longer areas looking for water and food. They go closer to villages or the homes of poachers. So the number of the wildebeest that are killed as a result of this increases.
So when there's more drought, that pushes wildebeest closer to humans. How much have the numbers gone up in terms of wildebeest being poached?
About 100,000 wildebeest are poached every year. On top of that number, you would add more in years which have got less rainfall due to drought. So it's a massive loss.
Joseph's seen drought get more intense and more frequent in recent years. Since 2021, East Africa has been gripped by a horrific 3-year drought. And scientists say it was made 100 times more likely by climate change. It's not just drought that's causing a problem.
The temperature is increasing in Masai Mara. The average minimum temperature at night used to be about 7 degrees Celsius in the 1960s, but that has now increased to 11 degrees, which is an increase of 4 degrees Celsius.
That's a massive change in temperature. It means that the water that is in the ground and the river evaporates faster. So there's less for the animals to drink, and it's harder for grass to grow in Kenya. So they stay longer in Tanzania, where they're more likely to come into contact with poachers as they roam the plains for food and water, and they're also more likely to overgraze the grass. Climate change isn't the only factor. Joseph says there's been dramatic changes in land use since the 1970s. There are far more livestock, which means competition for grazing. And there's been an increase in human settlements, which come with a lot of fencing, so it's harder for the wildebeest to roam freely through the territory.
Yeah, I think the animals are trying to do the best they can to adapt. The habitats are getting lost or degraded in various ways. So climate change just continues to pile more pressure on these animals and accelerate the loss of the animals and the loss of their habitats.
And Joseph, you're Kenyan yourself, and you're obviously really passionate about these animals and this place. Does it make you sad that such fewer numbers are coming to the Kenyan side?
I am concerned about the migration, not just because the few are crossing into Kenya, because, you know, from the perspective of the wildebeest, they really do not know Kenya or Tanzania. They see the old Serengeti Mara.
They don't have passports.
They don't have passports. They see the Serengeti Mara as one ecosystem. So if one part of the system is not working well, then the whole system gets affected. So if we really want to preserve the migration into the future, then we really need to make sure that the whole system as a whole is working.
For tour guides like Nima, these changes make her job a whole lot harder.
So you get some of the guests like, okay, maybe my map shows me I have to go to the northern part of Serengeti because it's going to be a crossing at this time of the year. And then, but because of the climate change, the wildebeest can delay to go there. So it gives maybe as a safari guide a lot of pressure because there is no wildebeest here and I want my guests to get the same experience. My guests are traveled maybe from UK, from US, from all part of the world for this. So it gives us a lot of pressure, and also it's the best time also to explain to our guests about the climate change and to give them the education about it.
You're listening to The Climate Question from the BBC World Service. I'm Sophie Eastall, and we're hearing the stories of incredible animal migrations and how they're being affected by the changing climate. The UN recently released a landmark report on the state of the world's migratory animals, from turtles and fish to reptiles and birds. It studied more than 1,000 creatures and found that nearly half are in decline. Climate change was one of the top threats. We've heard a story about land migration on the plains of the Serengeti and the Masai Mara. But what about animals that prowl the ocean?
I love sharks. I think they're super interesting because they just capture people's imaginations.
This is Tricia Atwood. She's Associate Professor of Watershed Sciences at Utah State University in the US.
There's been a couple of close encounters. I just happened to be in a very tight area in a boat channel, and a very large tiger shark just kind of came up right behind me. He was trying to get around me, and I didn't really know what he was doing. but it did cause me a little bit of panic.
I bet. Was it a close shave?
I mean, he was so close behind me, I could have kicked it in the face, but he just went right past me. I do remember my husband was with me, and he was still on shore, and he was yelling at me, "Tricia!
Wow, how dramatic. Well, all went well and you're here talking to us. We're very glad. What we're here to talk about is migratory animals, and sharks migrate. Can you tell me why they migrate?
Yeah, so animals migrate for all types of reasons. So some of them migrate for food resources, but animals, including sharks, will also migrate to locations that are more suitable for things like mating or for giving birth.
And what kind of distances are we talking with these migrations? Are they covering huge swathes of ocean?
Oh, absolutely. Some of these shark species can travel massive distances. We've seen great white sharks that have traveled from the coast off of like Perth, Australia, all the way to South Africa.
Wow, that's incredible. And so we know that climate change is increasing temperatures, including ocean temperatures. Is that impacting sharks?
Absolutely. So sharks and lots of other animals sometimes are cued by water temperatures or air temperatures that is telling them, hey, this is the season for you to go somewhere else. Because climate change is altering those temperatures, they may choose to migrate at a time that isn't appropriate. Then when they get there, there's no food and now they're in trouble. Animals are also moving because all animals have a thermal temperature limit that their body operates at. And if you exceed those limits, the temperatures are too high or those temperatures are too cold, the body can't function right anymore and it will start to die.
Really? So have there been some examples where sharks have moved because of rising sea temperatures into other places?
Yes. So we have seen that great white sharks are moving to cooler waters. So great white sharks are kind of like the Goldilocks, and they like these temperate waters that aren't too hot and aren't too cold.
Just right.
Yeah, just right. Well, where they're currently living isn't just right anymore. And so they're having to move in search of colder waters. In California, that means they're having to move north. And we've seen that since 2014, great white sharks have moved about 600 kilometers more north than we would expect to find them. And it's great to see that they're adapting, because if they didn't, there's a chance that they could go extinct. But being as these sharks are very, very large organisms and they do kind of invoke a level of fear in people, it's got people a little bit nervous. Even though we have not seen any increases in human conflict with great white sharks.
Humans aren't the only ones alarmed by great white sharks. Sea turtles are also pretty frightened of becoming dinner.
Yeah, so sharks have this amazing ability not just to scare us, but to also scare the things that they eat. And that changes the behavior of their prey. When you remove those sharks, those things like sea turtles can eat everywhere and anywhere, and they can do it extensively. They can really hammer down seagrass meadows. Add the sharks back in, we see that those sea turtles move to very particular locations where the risk of being eaten is lower, and they will just forage there, leaving the whole rest of the seagrass meadow to grow.
Seagrass meadows are really useful. In fact, they actually help to protect all of us from climate change, which is mainly caused by carbon dioxide. Here's how.
Seagrass, it's a plant, and everybody knows that plants are one of our major defenses against climate change. Plants take up CO2 out of either the water column or out of the air, and that helps store it in their biomass. And so we want lots of plants to be in the ocean. So when we start to lose things like sharks, that can cause a change in how much carbon is being stored. So we've known that from research in Australia that sharks help increase carbon storage in coral reefs and seagrass ecosystems by 40 to 60%.
40 to 60% more carbon storage thanks to sharks. So when sharks' migration is altered because of rising sea temperatures, this whole carbon storage system gets disrupted. Tricia says this is happening in the waters off the United States, Australia, and Indonesia. But when sharks are in the right place, these fearsome animals can be climate change heroes. Given that sharks have this vital role in helping to store carbon in the oceans, do you think that they deserve the bad rep that they get as killing machines?
No, but I think, Jaws has a lot to say for that. the guy who wrote that book, he regretted writing that book. He spent most of his life after writing that dedicated to shark conservation.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah, he felt, I guess, an extreme guilt because, people basically went on a murdering spree after that movie. I mean, it instilled a level of fear in people that they had probably never, ever imagined.
I've never even seen Jaws because I know I'm going to be too scared. But sharks aren't the only migratory animal that acts as a secret weapon against climate change.
research that we worked on shows that by just managing about 10 groups of animals, we could be taking out or sequestering more CO2 from the atmosphere by about 6 gigatons of carbon per year.
6 gigatons a year? So for perspective, some experts say that we need to suck 10 gigatons of CO2 a year out of the atmosphere to meet our climate goals. Trisha's study found that protecting and restoring the populations of certain animal species, including sharks, could get us 60% of the way there. Any guesses what the others are?
What?
Marine fish, whales, grey wolves, musk oxen, elephants, bison, sea otters, and... Yep, those snorting, grass-munching wildebeest that we heard about earlier are in this powerful lineup. Why? Well, it's a lot to do with the basic functions of life: eating and pooing.
Each wildebeest eats 4 kilograms of grass a day. That means a super herd leaves behind it 420 tons of dung every day. It's an immense windfall for dung beetles.
All that juicy grass that the wildebeest chomp is made out of carbon, and so their dung is made out of carbon, and that gets eaten by dung beetles who bury that carbon into the soil. But wildebeest also help prevent wildfires.
Yeah, so we've seen that when we lose wildebeest, they're not grazing those grasslands anymore, and that can cause those grasslands to be overloaded with fuel. So when that grass becomes dry and dead, it's fuel for fires. And fires are the worst thing imaginable when it comes to climate change, right? You're taking carbon that was stored in a plant and you're instantly turning it into CO2. And so when we lose wildebeest, we have more fires and we have more intense fires. And that strongly reduces the amount of carbon stored on those ecosystems. And the areas where they used to go into, that they're no longer making it to, we see that they become these massive fuel stocks for fires.
So in Kenya, there could be more wildfires as wildebeest aren't coming as much as they used to, which, as we've heard, has a climate cost. And all across this massive ecosystem, it's the migration of these animals that's key to locking that planet-warming carbon into the landscape. And that's why we need to protect it. Along with the sharks that terrorize the oceans and conserve the seagrass meadows, they're a secret weapon in the fight against climate change. Of course, there are many other reasons why we should protect these migrating creatures. For people like Nima, they mean everything.
Working as a guide in Serengeti, I love it because I love animals. I love nature. So me working here with all of these animals, the landscape, the beauty of Serengeti makes me feel like I'm in the right place where I'm belonging.
If you have a climate question or a comment on this show, which was first broadcast in March 2024, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at theclimatequestion@bbc.com. I'm Sophie Eastor, and the producers were myself and Octavia Woodward. The editors were Greya Jackson and Tom Bigwood. Mixing and sound design was by Tom Brignall. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Chad Stout, and I'm a registered professional forester in California. Growing up, I was always in the woods, and I've just always had a passion for that. Now, I'm passionate about growing a sustainable working forest. What makes a working forest sustainable is growing more than what we harvest. And managing those forests to promote health, we're looking 80 to 100 years down the road. The forest that I'm working on is for my kids' kids.
Learn more at workingforestinitiative.com.
Yoga is more than just exercise. It's the spiritual practice that millions swear by. And in 2017, Miranda, a university tutor from London joins a yoga school that promises profound transformation.
It felt a really safe and welcoming space. After the yoga classes, I felt amazing.
But soon, that calm, welcoming atmosphere leads to something far darker, a journey that leads to allegations of grooming, trafficking, and exploitation across international borders.
I don't have my passport, I don't have my phone, I don't have my bank cards, I have nothing.
The passport being taken, the being in a house and not feeling like they can leave.
World of Secrets is where untold stories are unveiled and hidden realities are exposed. In this new series, we're confronting the dark side of the wellness industry, where the hope of a spiritual breakthrough gives way to disturbing accusations.
You just get sucked in so gradually, and it's done so skillfully that you don't realise.
And it's like this secret that's there.
I wanted to believe that, you know, that whatever they were doing, even if it seemed gross to me, was for some spiritual reason that I couldn't yet understand.
Revealing the hidden secrets of a global yoga network.
I feel that I have no other choice. The only thing I can do is to speak about this and to put my reputation and everything else on the line. I want truth and justice. And for other people to not be hurt, for things to be different in the future.
To bring it into the light and almost alchemize some of that evil stuff that went on. And take back the power.
World of Secrets, Season 6, The Bad Guru. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.